iZotope and Native Instruments have teamed up to create the start-to-finish bundle that home recording guitar nerds have been waiting for. Plus, you, dear listener, get an extra 10% off with Guitar Nerds by using discount code NERDS10 at the checkout on iZotope.com. From the creative spark to the final touch, their new bundles include pretty much everything you could possibly need, which is great because it's far too easy to sink hundreds of pounds and a big chunk of your time into just picking up random plugins. The Music Production Suite 4.1 and Complete 13 bundle contains over 30 intelligent mixing, mastering and repair plugins, 65 premium instruments, 20 plus expansions and over 35,000 sounds. And if that's a bit basic for you, they've also bundled Music Production Suite 4.1 with Complete 13 Ultimate, which gives you everything that makes Complete 13 incredible, plus a colossal library of added synths, sampled instruments and effects, 115 plus premium instruments and effects, 39 Native Instruments expansions and over 65,000 sounds. Whew. It sounds like a lot. It is. It's very good, very comprehensive. And as we've come to expect from iZotope, it's very good value. If you're looking to get into home recording, I cannot recommend it more highly. And if you're already into home recording, it really is the one-stop shop for making what you do sound better. This podcast is entirely treated and produced using iZotope plugins, and Native Instruments have been responsible for almost every synth or sample you've heard on our Guitar Nerds jingles. Check out their great new bundles on iZotope.com or follow links in the description of this podcast and use discount code NERDS10 at the checkout for 10% off anything in the iZotope arsenal. Hello and welcome to the Guitar Nerds Podcast, the world's number one guitar podcast. I am your host, Joe Branton, joined this week by Matt Knight.
Hello, Mr. Joe.
Hello, Mr. Matt. Hello, dear listener. Welcome. It's episode 46 of season 3. That seems like
46.
Less than we... Yeah, that seems like 46. Less than we normally manage. But, dear listener, this is the final episode in season 3 of the Guitar Nerds podcast. So, of course, we're back in January with season 4, but we will have Gear of the Year 2022, which is going to start... We've got a week off next week and then Gear of the Year after that, but this is the final episode, Matt. Just you and
Wait,
me.
Wait, have we got... I thought Gear of the Year was next week. We're recording it next week.
We're recording it next week. That's right, yeah. So we're recording it on the 12th and 13th, but I believe it's going to come out on the 19th and 20th.
And then we're also recording a little special Patreon thing, which we'll keep secret. You have to sign up to Patreon to get it.
No, I'm going to tell people what it
is.
Are
you going to tell people?
Well, because you know, this is a cool thing. Me, Matt and I have managed to force, no, we haven't. We've got the old team back together. So for Christmas, we're going to be doing a Guitar Nerds Christmas special quiz with the full old school Guitar Nerds team. Matt, me, J. Cross, and the man who started it all, Mark Packham.
The pack of ham.
We're going to be doing, it's going to be a Patreon quiz. I think I'm going to be quiz master, and it's going to be the three of you fighting it out. So I'm going to start writing that this week. But as a Christmas-themed guitar quiz topical to 2022. That's what I think I'm aiming for.
Nice, nice. Well, all of our previous quizzes have been roaring successes. but I can't believe, we're at the end of another year. Are we at 10 years yet?
I don't know. I really should find out, shouldn't I? That's the sort of thing I should check.
And we're going to come into it next year strong, me and you. Riding the train.
Yeah. We're a lot of things planned for next year because, of course, Matt, you're moving. So you're moving more. Where does it get? Is it Midlands? Is Norfolk
Midlands?
County the Midlands?
No,
I don't know.
I'm not going that far.
Well, north of London.
Everything north of London is the north, I guess. Or as if you're in Brighton, everything north of Brighton is the north. Yes. I am moving to Suffolk for the short term and potentially Norfolk in the long term. The home of Tractors in Suffolk, and then in Norwich, the home of Mustard.
There you go.
And Delia Smith.
That's it.
Yeah, no, just getting out into the countryside. Hopefully, yeah, have a bit more space, have a bit more room to put all of the stuff. I've packed up my entire studio and realised I own quite a lot of stuff.
Well, yes. So you will be there in Suffolk and then Norfolk for next year. And I think I'm probably going to come and visit, or we're going to work something out. But we are going to actually do, dear listener, I do promise this, the pedal board build-off. Matt and I are both going to build our Alder and Ash pedal boards with all the various things. I'm actually glad we didn't do it, because I feel like I really have a theme now. Before, I was just going to shove everything on it. I was like, I want the Empress Sawyer on there and lots of pedals with lots of buttons and all this over-functional MIDI. But now I've worked out that what I actually like is classic old school stuff. And so my board's going to be more geared around that than...
I had a thought, Joe, actually, and I'll put this out there live, unscripted, for you and the listener as a kind of thought. Long-term listeners of the podcast may remember that once Mark Packham did a fantasy football league type thing, but with gear. Do you remember where it's like you've got 40 points to spend?
Oh, yeah.
And like every choice costs you points. And you've got to build like the best possible board. And I was like, what if, Joe, we listed out all the stuff we've got, because we've both got a lot of stuff. And the kind of the more weighty, more expensive, more boutique stuff cost more in terms of virtual points. Right. Cheaper stuff costs less. And you've got a limited amount of points that you could physically spend. You've got to put the best board together. And then we put it out to the audience to vote. I kind of like that idea, because like you say, we could be like, oh well, we're just really classic board, I've just got a Klon and a analog delay pedal. But I'm like, imagine if you've got a, you know, don't know.
I'm up for adding a point system to this as well.
I like the idea of going, right, you've got 25 points. If you want to put a Zoya on there, cost you like 10 points,
yeah,
because it's ridiculous and it's expensive. But you know, if you want to put like your Lonely Boss DS1 on there, you know, maybe that's only 2 points. Behringer, half a point.
Nice.
You know, don't know. I was having a think about it. I'll think about it over Christmas.
Oh, yeah.
In between mince pies and whatever else you do at Christmas.
That's it.
Eggnog. Just mince pies. Just
mince pies, yeah. I'm up for that. I think that's a great idea. We should definitely do that. And then, I guess, after... That will be next year. We'll have the pedal board build off. It's going to be super exciting. So you want to try and do some more stuff out of my office, some more physical guitar nerds things next year. That's kind of the plan. But before we get on to what will be season 4 of the Guitar Nerds podcast, we have Gear of the Year, the highlight of our year, Gear of the Year 2022. This year's been a bit better, I think. Well, I know from going through all the press releases. At the start of every year, I make a document where I'm going to put all the press releases. So when Gear of the Year comes round, I can just be like, right, well, here's my document of all the things released this year. It lasts about 2 weeks and then I stop filling it out. So at the end of every year, I have to go through my email and, you know, websites like Music Radar and Premier Guitar that put out press releases, and I have to look back through 12 months of Gear press releases and put together them all, and it takes forever. Next year I promise I will actually be effective at putting it together from the start, but I know from having spent a substantial portion of my weekend getting the list together that there's actually quite a good range of stuff out this year, so I think it's going to be a bit more exciting. And also, we've started the first rounds for the Gear of the Year. For the Listener's Choice Gear of the Year for both our... if you're a listener, dear listener, join our Facebook group, the Guitar Nerds group on Facebook. There's a post on there for Gear of the Year. All you've got to do at the moment is comment on there with your suggestions. Anything, as many things as you want, or, you know, as few things as you want, just suggesting what you think should be Gear of the Year. After we've got a bunch of suggestions on there, I'm going to work out what are the most, you know, what the multiples are, what people are saying the most of. Pick a top 5, something like that. Top 5, top 10, depends how many of you suggest things. And then I'll make that into a poll and you can vote on that. And that will decide listeners' Gear of the Year, listeners' choice Gear of the Year winner. The same thing's happening on Patreon at the moment. Patreon supporters have been a little more involved than the Facebook group, despite there being, you know, substantially more people on the Facebook group. So don't miss it. Dear listener, on the Facebook group, go find that post and tell me what you think should be Gear of the Year. Should we have a little look, Matt, at what people have suggested so far?
Indeed, indeed. I'm also a little look behind the curtain of Gear of the Year. Joe, this year, because there will be 4 of us, there will be 2 different guests this time. Mm. You've put a list together of, you know, guitars, amp modelers and stomp boxes, and then asked the 4 hosts, including yourself, to go and list their top 3 or what they think might be the kind of things they want to think about, you know, which is good, you know, getting ahead of it. And I can already see that you are going to be left in the cold.
I know.
On some things there, Joe.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
And
dear listener, if you have a little think about a product released this year, which I might absolutely fundamentally hate.
I tell you what's been interesting this year is, obviously, the reverb list that we talked about last week was very, very interesting.
Yeah.
But a real lack of amplifiers this year. A real lack of amplifiers this year.
What have I got? Stomp boxes. 15 I've got in the list.
It's not 15, many.
And that includes like pedal amplifiers. That's like including the like the Universal Audio Ruby 63 and Dream 65 pedal amps. You know.
Yeah, really, it's a very tough one this year. But obviously, stomp boxes are strong as ever.
Yeah.
Almost too many to talk about.
Well, I limited guitars. 32 is what we've got. Obviously, that's not everything that's been released, dear listener, but, you know, when, I don't know, when...
That's our short
list. Yeah, that's a short list. I can't put in everything because there's a new pedal that comes out every week from every brand. So that's 32 pedals that I think are important.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
So I think yes, there's some good stuff on there. What's on the listener's choice so far then, Joe? Is that what you were looking
at? Yeah, let's have a little look. I'm going to announce who our Gear of the Year guests are, though, as well, the 2 hosts. So it will, of course, be Matt and I. Last year, we had Adrian Thorpe from Thorpey Effects. And, of course, we had Mikey Demas from Redbeard Effects as well. That was our host. This time round, we're going to be joined, Matt and I are going to be joined by Blake Weiland of Chasing Tone and the Tone Mob, and we will be being joined by Philip Carter of the 40 Watt Podcast. So it's going to be a complete amalgamation, a big mashup of the guitar podcasts, which is going to be very exciting. I'm excited to have like podcast hardened guests on this year.
Yeah. I think it's a real mishmash of different podcasts this year, which is very nice. So it was, the year before, as you said, Thorpey and Mikey. Can't remember who it was before that. I think it was me, you and Jay before that.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. I think we did a 3.
So I think this one, it's good. I'm looking forward to it. I'm very much looking forward to it. There has still been some cool stuff this year. You forget how much stuff there's been. But definitely felt like a different kind of year with no NAMM. Well, NAMM, very small kind of NAMM, you know, and no summer NAMM. Sort of the big announcements weren't all in that one sort of place, in that one sort of roundup.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
But yeah.
But it looks like listener's choice so far. I'm just checking the Facebook group rather than the Patreon right now. Looks like largely effects. Not many guitars suggested, and very few amplifiers suggested as well. We're seeing a surprising amount of votes for the Boss SL2. I only say surprising, so that's the new Slicer, everyone, that I don't think we ever really got around to talking about properly on the podcast. But that's the new...
No, I don't think we did.
No, it's the new single box Slicer. That's had a few votes. I only say it's surprising because it's almost had more votes than the Boss RE2 and the RE202, which I thought would be the big hitter for Boss
this
year.
It's another... prolific year. You know, my eyes are more baggy than usual. You know, I've got to the end of the year and gone, yeah, it's a lot of stuff. I mean, this year alone was thinking about today, so this year alone, and I guess this doesn't necessarily yet give away much, but we've launched GX100, you know, our sort of mid-price multi-level multi-fix, Katana 110 and 210 bass,
yep.
RE2, RE202, dual cube and dual cube bass. An addition to our foot switch line on the GA FCEX for Katanas and others. Then we've also done the FS1WL wireless MIDI 3-button foot controller and DS1W and SL2. So four different effects.
Yeah.
And a whole range of amps. So it's been a crazy, crazy busy year.
Has been. Blimey. We'll see what's the most popular. But yeah, the other things that people are suggesting, we've seen the Duke of Tone come up a lot. Unsurprising, I think. I think the Duke of Tone's a big one. Like an affordable, you know, Prince of Tone is
yeah,
is
I think
cool.
We've seen that a few times this year as well, that kind of... bringing something potentially unobtainium into the world of obtainium. But then again, we've seen the polar opposite. I mean, it's crazy to think that, I think looking at the Stompbox list, the cheapest Stompbox on there is probably DS1W, actually. I think it was like 159 euros,
right.
Where it goes all the way up to the Meris LVX. Well, in fact, goes more than that. The new Eventide H90, which we haven't talked about on the podcast yet, but a whopping 999 pounds.
Yeah, that's so much money. That's a lot of money. Actually, I think the cheapest effect pedal is actually also one that the listeners have got behind a lot, which is the Earthquaker Devices Special Cranker, the update of the
Indeed,
speaker cranker.
Yeah.
110 quid they go for, and lots of people suggesting them. I know it's one of those things, and it always happens with gear of the year, where products that are released at the end of the year, we're bound to be talking like the shine hasn't worn off them, and essentially the special cranker is just another good drive. I don't know if it came out in January if everyone would be talking about it as much. That said,
I don't know.
It's very, very good, as was the speaker cranker, as is the plumes, as is, I think I mentioned this maybe last week, but Earthquaker Devices, everyone talks about the Rainbow Machine and the Afterneath and all the other sort of crazy things they do, their modulation, their reverbs, their delays. Their drives are phenomenal. Like, they do a great just range of normal, light, medium gain drives that can't be dismissed. So yes, the special cranker has definitely earned its place. Evidently, I think it almost definitely will be making the top five for the listeners. Whether or not they vote for it in the poll is another thing, but
interesting.
Will be interesting. So I'm excited. I'm getting very ready for Gear of the Year now.
This year, I know everyone says it every year, but this year has gone crazy quick. Mm-hmm. And it's always good to just think about all the other stuff that's come out this year.
Yeah.
You know, you just sort of forget, don't you? You just forget what's actually happened this year. And it's going to be nice to just go through it, you know, regardless of if all my products win or not. it's going to be good.
One of the things that I find more so, I guess, this year than in previous years is when something takes off that's not necessarily a new product for this year. Sometimes things take a couple of years to become very successful. And obviously, as discussed in when we were doing the Reverb.com's top sellers, The Squire Base 6, finally, sort of however many years, nine years after we made the vintage modified Gear of the Year winner and then got a load of flak for it. And then a couple of years later, we even said we think it was a mistake to have made it Gear of the Year winner because it really hasn't taken off. This year, thanks to the Get Back documentary, but also thanks to a great range of colours. Obviously, you got the Shell Pink one with the matching headstock, Matt. Since then, they've released a load of other FSRs. They've done it in that gorgeous, like, that almost honey wood finish with a maple neck with black block inlays. And I think they've done a purple metallic one as well. I can't remember if that's matching headstock, but they've done a load of FSRs in it now. And we're seeing people modding them, like we saw that electric guitar company neck.
The aluminium neck.
Yeah, you know, I really feel like that is the big thing from this year is that people have started to work out how to use Base 6s. Base 6s are everywhere. Everyone's buying them. People are modding them. Base 6s, they're the new thing. But actually, you know, they came out a few years ago, so we can't feature it in the list. But if I was to pick a guitar of 2022, that's probably it.
Yeah, it's... It's interesting, isn't it? It's like when we were talking about last week with those reverb lists, you know, best new product and best overall seller. Some interesting stuff. I definitely don't feel this year, I mean, obviously I'm going to be biased towards my own stuff. Looking at the list, there's nothing that struck me out as like instantly game changing, no. I guess.
I tell you what, like you said, Matt, we were all putting together, you know, you, me, Philip and Blake are all putting together our top three or four products in each category. We're just doing guitars, amps and effects this year, Dillis, and we're not doing a bass range or anything. And we're putting amps and modelers into one category as well. But, you know, I was going through it and I was like, I'm going to have to talk myself into some things. Like there aren't any things on there where I'm going, right, this year, this has come out and now all I care about is this. I sort of feel they're a bit like, there are some okay things, but I don't know how hard I'm going to... Well, I'm going to fight hard for some of these things, but...
But it feels like some things haven't got the... I guess, like, the hype that some things maybe have got before, which I find strange. You know, one of the things, again, we haven't really talked about yet as a piece of news, but it is going to be on the Gear of the Year list, is the Music Man Kaizen, which is the new... Tosin Abasi signature, which I think came as a surprise to so many, considering he's got his own successful guitar brand.
Yeah, I mean...
I've just not seen a lot of people talk about it at all.
No, we did. I feel like we spoke about it when it was announced. Maybe it was announced at NAMM, but certainly the press release is as of November 15th. So Ernie Ball are now like, buy this guitar as of now. So...
Right.
So we did speak about it before, but not in a great deal of detail. Maybe it was a leak or something. I can't remember why it came up.
I can't remember.
But yeah, what a weird one. So another signature model for Tosin Abasi. And here's the thing, totally different again. He's really had an evolution of guitars. You think his first Ibanez signature model, which was essentially an 8-string Strat, HSH Strat, and it was even kind of classic in its looks. It had like a bound neck, block inlays, binding on the body, taut guard, like it was like a really fat Stratocaster because of it was 8 strings. And then he went to his own company, which of course existed in several guises, I think, as he worked with different luthiers. And there's a whole can of worms with everything that happened with those companies that we will not go into on the podcast. But that was a new shape, a very, very modern single cut fan fret style shape, because of course his original signature model wasn't fan frets. And now this Kaizen, his new signature model, different again, still very modern but way more metal, like a stealth black. It's got two big, it's kind of a sort of offset strap but with really metal like horns on there. It looks like a metal guitar, which he's never done before. You know, he had a classic guitar, then he had a modern guitar, this is a metal guitar.
I mean, I'm amazed considering just because of his, you know, like you say, he had obviously the signature Ibanez, but then he had this Abasi Concepts, and for him to then come out and have another brand, I'm sort of like, or another model, I'm really surprised that they've kind of, he's gone, why couldn't you make that with his own brand. And yeah. I guess, you know, we are in a...
I mean, who doesn't want a signature model from Ernie Ball Music Man?
Well, I guess we're also in a world where, you know, you can go and have a guitar made in a Korean factory somewhere and be made very, very well, for example. Mm. And you can draw up your own designs and have cool stuff made. You know, look at Reverend.
Yeah.
You know, and Joe Naylor and, you know, doing all those designs and working with Ken and Penny and getting all of that done and going to those factories. But ultimately, you know, going to someone like Music Man where, you know, me and you went, Joe, and, you know, those the engineers and just the sheer engineering prowess of that team, they could probably realise things that you literally couldn't realise himself, even with designers going to a factory, you know, and having it built elsewhere. I think, you know, when you look at this, obviously not only is it multi-scale and multi-stringed, but also it's got this, you know, neck radius. They're literally calling an infinity radius, so a conical fretboard radius that peaks along the treble side edge of the fretboard and folds towards the player for an unobstructed view of the entire fretboard in playing position. You know, I don't think you could have... I guess they're not going to make hundreds of thousands of these like they might be making of the John Petrucci.
Well, they're making,
you know,
50,
which is obviously that.
And they've only sold one. Oh, no, I don't know if it was 50. They've got 49 left. Oh, it's
75. Really? I didn't realise it was...
75 worldwide, and they have 49.
I didn't realise it was limited. Yeah. I thought it was a standard model. Ah, okay, that makes a little bit more sense. But yeah, 70... Now that's interesting. 75 worldwide, 49 remaining. Is the price a factor? Yep. I mean, I'd definitely buy one if it was six string. I'd 4, be like...
$4,099 American dollars is the street price, dear listener.
Oops, I've just absolutely accidentally added
have
it
you,
to my
have
basket.
Have you? Go on, Matt. Go on, Matt. That. Which colour? Spectre Flare or Apollo Black? Spectre Flare is silver, dear listener.
Oh yeah, I'd probably take the silver one. I reckon.
Really?
The silver one looks very. The silver looks very good.
I did not like that.
But yeah, it's a cool guitar. I think it's. I think he's the right person to do it. I think again, they pick artists that like to push things forward in terms of boundaries, in terms of design.
Well, he's the perfect artist for Music Man to have. And Matt, like, it's we've spoken about this a bunch on the podcast over the years. You and I have been to a lot of like custom shops and factories and done factory tours. I know this is well-trodden content, dear listener, but I think we both agree that it was the best. Like, Music Man was just
absolutely
it was just the best.
We need to reach out to them again and just go again. And I've made the mistake now of clicking on the vault and seeing some of the stuff they've got available. So a couple of instant highlights. St. Vincent HH in matte plum crazy, which is a matte purple, which just looks absolutely amazing. And also an Albert Lee HH in polar night, which is basically like a kind of starry silver burst.
Oh god.
It's just all so good.
Everything they have is excellent. I wish they did a bass that I wanted, because I would buy it.
What do you mean? You don't want the Jongmyon Bongo 6HH with the half maple, half rosewood fretboard?
I have thought about buying a bongo several times, but every time I do, I then message you guys about it.
No,
and Mark Packham's always like, don't buy a bongo, that's ridiculous.
Yeah, Mark Packham. I'm like, definitely buy the bongo. The best one. The best one. But it's interesting, actually, just talking about Music Man, because obviously packing away in my studio, packing away all my guitars, and playing the Valentine, and just going, God, it really is the best. And if I could have a signature guitar, it would 100% be with Music Man. However, having played the Ed O'Brien a lot, I'm like... I always thought the Music Man had like the best shaped neck on it. I was always thought it was a relatively chunky neck until then you pick up the Ed O'Brien and you're like, no, that neck is monstrous.
Right.
It really is like a baseball bat.
Yeah. It's a proper 50s Fender neck, that's why.
It's just great. But I was thinking about it and I was like, actually, if I had to go and buy another brand new, someone says, right, here's like a few grand, go and buy another. You know, go and buy any guitar, I'd be tempted to go and buy another Music Man. I really would.
The quality you get from them is unmatched.
It really is. It really is. I think that's what always draws me to those guitars is that Yeah, I thought, you know, and I do see like some Fender custom shops every now and then. I'm like, but then I'm like, do you know what? I definitely have a St. Vincent in matte purple.
there you go. Matt, I realized that you mentioned the Ernie Ball Music Man John Myung Bongo 6 with the neck that's in two colors.
Mm.
I realized you mentioned that because you thought that was weird and you probably don't know that I have that.
No, I think I remembered, because you were saying, oh, I should I buy a bongo? And I remembered that saying, you've actually
got one. But it's the sixth, I can't play it. So what it was because John Myung is an Ashdown artist, and we released, like, Ashdown released a John Myung signature pedal, Ernie Ball sent us one of their bongo sixes for, like, a photo shoot. But we did the photo shoot, and then we were like, should we send this back to you? And they were like, you might need it for something in the future. So it was just at Ashdown, and Dan from Ashdown was like, do you want to look after this? Because it's only going to get wrecked here. So I have this Ernie Ball Music Man John Myung Bongo 6, which I can't play because it's a six-string bass, but the string distance it's on a five-string neck. Mm-hmm. So the strings are just so close together, it's impossible to play. I tried to record a demo of it, and I'm like, I don't know how this man plays this.
Well, with extreme accuracy.
Yeah, that's it.
But yeah, he's, you know, I think to me he's always been like the most extreme bass player, realistically.
Yeah.
Like, just, I think I remember reading an interview, and I'm sure we've probably talked about this on the podcast before, where someone was saying, it might have been John Petrucci, he said he's the only musician that's ever met that warms down after a gig as well as warms up before a gig.
Well, that's hilarious. I don't even know how you go about doing that. Slower backstage,
nor,
I guess.
Nor do I, but I'm guessing he's just like, well, you know, it's just crazy, really.
Yeah.
But yeah, well, interesting. Well, we won't be talking about that, but we might be talking about the Kaizen.
Yeah. Well, we might be talking about the Kaizen on Gear of the Year. One thing we didn't mention about the Kaizen, which is very interesting, is that it's a seven string, and of course he is an eight string player normally.
Yeah. Yeah. I just want to know why it wasn't and a bassy guitar, I guess.
Yeah.
And it's not sort of, they've not really made that clear. I mean, the fact they've made 75, I don't know, maybe they were thinking about pushing new boundaries in terms of guitar manufacturing. Mm. I don't know. But it's certainly interesting, to say the least. But then also, he must be making tons of money because his Instagram account is just guitars and super expensive cars.
Yeah.
So I'm sure he's crying all the way to
the
bank.
Indeed, indeed.
Now here at Guitar Nerds Podcast, quality is very important to me. I spend a lot of time editing the audio for each episode so it sounds as good as possible. And so naturally, a very important part of that is the microphone I use to record with. I'm very fussy, and so recently when we switched to using the Lewitt LCT440, it was after spending some time with the mic and making sure that I was happy with it. It's a great mic, it's very affordable for what it is, and it will get you through almost any situation you can throw at it, from recording brass to vocals to amps to podcasts. Check it out at lewitt-audio.com. Now, dear listener, for this section of the podcast, we said goodbye to Matt Knight for now. Matt's going to be back on joining us on the Patreon episode a little later. But for this section of the podcast, dear listener, we've never done this before. Normally we have the same lineup the whole way through, but we're mixing things up a little bit. Last episode of season 3, of course, we have now. I am joined by Paul Stevens from Blackstar Amplification. Paul, hello and thank you and welcome to the Guitar Nerds podcast.
Hello, thank you for having me. I would have to admit I probably am a guitar nerd as well, and have been for quite some time.
Yes. Well, considering the amount of time that you spent working on the St. James amplifier for Blackstar, I would say that does sound like you are indeed a guitar nerd, and that is exactly what I wanted to talk about, dear listener. We mentioned it before. In fact, I did a little demo of the St. James the EL 34-50 watt combo. We did a little demo on the Patreon episode a couple of weeks ago. Also, I think I spoke about it on the main episode, dear listeners who aren't on the Patreon, but obviously Blackstar sent me one of these amplifiers I really like it. It's kind of a wonderful blend of all the things that I want. It's ticking those boxes for me, dear listeners. Everyone knows this year I am just into vintage Valve things. I did that whole thing in lockdown. I wanted all the plugins. I was really enjoying all of that stuff. And then I realized that I hated all of that and just wanted old school sounding stuff. The St. James is managing to be bang in the middle and offering me zero compromise on either one of those two things. So I'm a big fan. So it made sense for us to get Paul on the podcast to talk all about them. Because, dear listener, I'm sure you are very well aware of the Black Star St. James range of amplifiers, as they came out some time ago, and they really were sort of talk of the town when they came out. But we're going to give you a little bit of an overview of them now. So, Paul, this is the amplifier you've been working on for the last couple of years, right?
Yeah, originally the MD Ian called me into his office. I think this must have been 2019. And said, what can we do? It could be really different. It could really shake things up. And I just said, well, lightweight valve amp, you know. And I'm not sure exactly how the conversation went, but you know, we had to think about how then we'd do that. The major cause of the weight in a valve amp is obviously the mains transformer. Yeah. So it made sense to look into developing a switch mode power supply. Now, obviously, switch mode power supplies are being used pretty much everywhere else, in TVs and, you know, laptop supplies, phone chargers. I'm looking around my office at the moment and looking at every supply in here, and everything pretty much is switch mode power supply. Right. But we don't tend to use them in valve guitarists because it's actually quite a complicated supply. It's not like a laptop supply, which is maybe, you know, 15 volts in and not too high current. It's not like a charger or a USB type thing, which is 5 volts. We've got like nearly 500 volts for one of the supplies. There's the heater supply, which is high current, low voltage. Then you need the other low voltage supplies, and then the bias supply, which is a negative voltage. So there's basically four supplies usually in a modern valve guitar amp.
So it's a fair amount of engineering required.
Yeah, it isn't something you can just go and get off the shelf. You can with nearly anything else. You only got to really worry about what connector is on the end and possibly whether it's the right polarity. Something for a valve guitar amp, it really had to be specifically designed. So we spent a little while speccing it out to start with, and then started developing it. And we had to go through many, many changes to get it how we wanted to. Initially, it was overheating. It wasn't reliable enough. And obviously, we wanted it to be as reliable as a transformer. So it did take a long time to get it right, but obviously that is what we're supposed to do. You don't pick the first one and go, yeah, that'll do. Stick it in, sell it. You know, so it did. We spent a long time on and particularly on testing as well, thousands of hours of testing in all sorts of simulated environments, all sorts of. And we found out a lot of things about what to do and what not to do in these scenarios, and it also highlighted how robust a power supply needs to be in a guitar amp, you know, because a lot of audio testing is done at, you know, third power or even eighth power, but that is nowhere near demanding enough as what do with a guitar amp. So we're actually testing stuff at what we call 90% duty cycle, which is almost just flat out for a day. To try and simulate worst case scenarios, because we didn't want these things to fall over at all. So yeah, we spent a long time on that. But then
did you guys look into like other options for that? Was it always going to be the transformer that you were going to go for? Because of course, you know, other companies have done things like, if they want to do a valve thing but make it lightweight, people tend to go with a valve preamp and then use like an ice chip to make it like a class D power stage or something like that. Did you think about hybrid, or was it always always had to be full valve?
We wanted it to be valve preamp, valve power amp, so it could genuinely be called a proper valve amp. But yeah, it isn't just the supply. There's also lightweight wood used for the cabinets, and what else is there? We've got actually a specially designed output transformer, which is smaller than a standard one as well, which again we tested to towards destruction. That actually we didn't have any problems with, but that is lighter. So we looked at anywhere where we could save weight, basically. But obviously the Transformer is the main thing. I mean, for example, the heads in this range, 50 watts, it's literally half the weight of the previous model using.
Right, of course. Same with the combos, of course, because they're like, yeah, they're 12 kilograms for a 50 watt combo, which I think of an average valve combo as being 20, 25 kilograms.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, the heads are less than 7.
Right.
So, I mean, I actually use two of them live, one of each. So I play in stereo because I'm a bit of a tart like that. But I can carry both at the same time easily, and a guitar in the other hand. You know, in fact, my girlfriend now doesn't mind carrying the amps in because my pedal board is heavier than the amps, so it has made everything a lot easier. And I mean, I actually was using them. The first gig I used them on was New Year's Eve last year, and to be honest, I haven't used my big older heavy amps since for any reason. I normally used to have like a big rig and a small rig, you know, big rig for festivals and theatres and a smaller rig for pubs or rehearsals, that kind of thing. Now I use the same pair of amps for every gig. I do change the cabinets, but the actual amps are the same for every gig because they're small enough that you don't mind taking them to the smaller gigs, and they're light enough, but they're still powerful enough at, you know, 50 watts to use for the bigger gigs and bigger stages where you need to fill the sound out more. So and then along with the cab rig outputs on it, which means obviously they're, you know, really, it's really good for connecting to the stage box and for recording. Then for me, they tick all the boxes that I need. So,
That was a big thing as well. The fact that it's not just, and we'll talk about like the sound of the amps as well, because of course that's actually the most important thing. It's wonderful that they're lightweight, but because you've managed to make them all valve, you've managed to actually focus on making them sound great.
Yeah.
But yes, the cab rig thing that you touched upon is fantastic because it means that, you know, certainly on the back of the combos, you've got three different preset cab sims that you can run straight to the front of house or straight into your interface to record. It's got USB out on it, is that right?
As well, yeah, there's three methods of taking outputs from cab rig. There's the USB, which can connect directly, obviously, into your computer recording software, whatever. And that's actually a stereo output as well. Because it simulates, apart from doing the cab sims, it's also simulating a room as well, the amp actually within a room, which you've got control of adjusting in the cab rig software as well. So it is very versatile. And of those free settings, you can put in your own sounds as well. You know, you can go and adjust it and then zap it into the amp and it will remember that the free settings that you choose. But there's the USB, there's the headphone output, which is stereo as well, which obviously is much more acceptable for actually using with headphones. If it's a mono headphone output, it can just sound like it's coming from the center of your head all the time, and it's horrible. So it's much more pleasing to have it in stereo. And then the balanced low impedance XLR output as well, which is obviously for stage use.
Yeah.
So it's got everything covered, really. But yeah, you're saying about the sound, because obviously we don't, as great as the SMPS is, and obviously that is the thing that's reduced the weight, we certainly don't want people to think that that's all we spent our time doing, because in parallel with developing that, we spent, again, thousands and thousands of hours on developing the actual tone of the analog side of it, because it is all analog, the basic signal path, obviously with valves in the preamp and valves in the power stage. And the particular amp that you've mentioned, the one with the EL34s in the power stage, has two preamps. One is basically a kind of bit subtle here, but kind of West Coast American clean sound, if you all know what I mean. And the other is a more of a British 60s sound that was made very popular by a certain band from Liverpool, amongst many other people.
Those on two, just on two simple channels, basically.
Although it has been deliberately designed to look simple, but even though it's one set of tone controls, the tone controls are electronically isolated. They're all actual dual gang pots. So the actual tone stacks behind that are completely separate depending on what channel you're on.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, so that we haven't had to compromise at all on where the you know the corner frequencies are and you know the center frequency of the middle control and all these kind of things. We've had to actually literally tune them how we want them to sound correct for the amp, which we're you know trying
to because of course you're not just adding a gain stage to an amp voicing, you're switching between an American and a British sound.
Yeah, it's they are totally independent valve circuits that for each of those channels. Yeah, and as I say, different EQ as well. So it's nice that it is simple because it you know someone can plug into one of them amps and just get great sound straight away without feeling intimidated by you know a whole load of controls. So it's very easy to use, but people shouldn't be thinking that it's a compromise internally because it certainly isn't. There's a lot going on in there, but it switches between. And then obviously on the British sounding one, it's got the 10 dB boost as well. So you've kind of noticed that.
That's great. That's a wonderful addition exactly how you get that sort of British vintage sound.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. So it's great for, it's great for kind of slightly crunchy sounds. It's a great pedal platform as well. So you've got the two most popular flavors of pedal platform in there, basically.
I noticed that's really how Blackstar are marketing the EL34. One is certainly even on the box that it came in. It says classic low gain pedal platform. That's very much what this one is aimed at.
The modern
player who wants to do everything on their board.
Yeah, I think there's two types of using them. Some obviously there is the pedal platform, and then there's people that like to switch between you know a clean sound and then a real high gain sound for on the actual amp. And I must admit, I use both amps.
Right.
In two different bands I play, and I use one as the main amp in one particular band where I need that particular British combo sound because of the kind of music it is. And then with my other band, I use the other head as the main amp, and then
the 6L6.
Yeah, so that's got the same clean channel, but then it's got a higher gain overdrive channel.
Yeah, is it based on a Blackstar distortion?
It's kind of a composite of the traditional, what we would now call traditional Blackstar overdrive circuit, which is driving a valve or two valve stages. But we're actually using them instead of the ISF based EQ, which is on most of our other amps, you know, the HT series and stuff like that. The actual EQ is more like a traditional British EQ that you'd find on one of those kind of amplifiers. Again, it's all dual gang pots, so those sets of controls are entirely separate inside, and there's no compromise. So yeah, between the two amps, hopefully we've covered all what people need, really.
You might have sort of kind of answered my next question with that statement a little bit, but with this, you know, when you decided to make this, the first thing you were thinking was we need to make a lightweight valve amp so we can make something modern. You want to give it the bells and whistles, things like direct recording, things like, you know, it can do 50 watts or 2 watts, so it does the practice room thing as well. You're trying to make something that's great for the modern player, but what made you choose these two voicings? I guess the 6L6, I understand, that feels like Blackstar bread and butter. But the EL34, I feel like is a bit of, it's not like, you know, that you guys haven't done things like this before, like with the Artist series and stuff like that, but it seems like another addition on top of an amp that's the USP of this amp is it's a lightweight all valve amp, but then you've also made it a very traditional sounding amp, which is almost a new thing for Blackstar. What kind of led you to that decision, I guess?
Well, it was partly kind of driven by what we find a lot of our artists request. Obviously with the Artisan range in particular, which we brought out right at the beginning of the company, that's been very popular with particular artists. You know, that 2x12 pedal platform format is very popular with those kind of players. So we wanted to do something as well as the high gain thing, which would suit those kind of players. So it really was really pointing each area of the product range at different players, really.
Right.
So it's, you know, we'd cover more ground and hopefully get more interest that way. So I mean, obviously, for a while there were some people that were thinking of Black Star as, you know, just, you know, quite a metal brand, but we, you know, we do a lot more than that. You know,
Black Star is always a modern brand. We spoke about it before we started recording, but you know, but Black Star is a, as you put it, a 21st century company. You know, you're how old is Black Star?
2007 officially it started. Yeah. So, comparatively new. When you think of, you know, the Marshalls, the PVs, and Fenders, you know, they've got quite a few decades on us. But
exactly. But it means you don't have sort of like a heritage to lean on, like that. You're not relying on reissues and things like that. You're always looking for the next new product.
I often use the word dogma. Right. Rather than heritage.
I see.
Because, I mean, as you know, there's a lot of people that are players and engineers in the company. So we're all fans of older amps as well. We've all played them kind of things, you know. So you don't necessarily have to reinvent stuff. It's just, it's kind of providing the sounds that people like but the best version of that sound. Because often when people play an older version of an amp, it isn't actually what they thought it was going to sound like, what they heard on the record, you know, that person doing it. So we try to present, you know, the best version of that kind of sound. And it does mean looking into the heritage of amps, not necessarily our heritage, but it doesn't mean that we don't acknowledge there is a heritage there in guitar amp design. It's just that we started at a different point and we're not stuck in certain ways. You know, we can use new technology and we don't, you know, we don't mind trying new things to get them sounds that we want.
Well, certainly. I mean, you know, looking for a new way to deal with the transformer is just something that most people, you know, wouldn't touch at all. You know, I work, as the listener knows, I do a lot of work with Ashdown engineering. Yeah. And you know, that Mark Gooday, who owns Ashdown Engineering, I remember him sort of talking about, you know, he'll say quite regularly, like, you can't, you know, what you need to make a good sounding amp is a big chunk of metal, talking about a transformer. And he's like, that's what makes, you know, amps sound good. And from his perspective, he's very, you know, they make hybrid amps, a solid state amp with a valve in the preamp. And it's a non-negotiable thing of their amps. You know, it's not something they'd ever consider to do. Of course they make Class D stuff, but they make it for, you know, it's entry level stuff. They're not trying to, you know, when you make the entry level stuff, the sound quality is going to be what it is, compromised at the price point that you're making it for. But you know, you guys actually considering trying to make a top quality amplifier whilst being willing to sacrifice something like the transformer is
But as I said, it wasn't easy, you know.
No.
we had to go through several variations of it before it did do that thing that a big lump of metal does. So in some ways, Mark is right. I know Mark from years ago. I've worked for Mark for a long time, so I know him very well. But he's in one respect, that's right. You do need a substantial supply. And we didn't find that we could just switch over to just the first, you know, guess design of what we could think of for the SMPS. It took a while to get there. And in fact, what we ended up with was about 50% bigger than the first design. So in some regards, that it, you know, is true. Yeah, you still need something substantial to provide that power. But hopefully we've proven it doesn't necessarily have to be a big lump of metal.
Well, that's it. Well, yeah, I mean, look, you know, when these amps first came out, I was kind of like, I don't know, is this going to be another one of these things? Is this the digital revolution, you know, sort of like with a slightly different hat on? You know, are we still in this thing where, because my opinion of, and dear listener, you're aware of this, is when their ice chip came out, when Class D stuff started being used in power stages, it just all sounded bad. But all of a sudden, the conversation changed. And people weren't talking about how good amps were. They were talking about how light they were or how small they were. And I just don't care. But I mean, you know, again, we spoke about this before. I like to think I don't care. But when I'm out on tour and I have to go out on, you know, four flights of stairs every night for a load in a crappy little venue, I start to care at that point. But it's about finding that that compromise.
But see, I don't feel the sound has been compromised.
Well, exactly, that's it.
I mean, obviously it must be pointed out, just in case anyone else is a bit confused, these are not Class D.
They are not.
It's not a digital amp. The only digital things in them is the reverb and the cab sim stuff
absolutely.
The actual signal path from the input until the speaker output is basically analog. So
absolutely. I should have been clearer with that. No.
It's just because I often hear other people get confused and they think that Class D is the same as SMPS, and they say, right, "Oh, it's digital." This, like, no, it's not. It's a switching supply, but it's the signal doesn't, you know, the guitar signal doesn't go through the supply. The supply is just what provides the voltages for the rest of the audio circuitry to work with. From what I've found and the comments I've got off of engineers, both live and in studios over the last year, is these are the best sounding amps I've ever played through. I'm fussy enough that I wouldn't use them if they didn't sound as good as the ones I was using before. You know, it's not just that I'm getting old and don't want to carry heavy stuff. They literally are the best sounding.
This is it. I really like that it has all the bells and whistles that I kind of want. Like, you know, again, the listener will know I went through a point in time of absolutely loving the Boss Katana. I couldn't believe sort of the price point versus the sound quality versus the ease of options from it. I just thought it was great for that sort of thing. But when I started coming back around to, you know, wanting a big proper valve amp again, it was such a shame to lose all the ease of use that came with, you know, something like a Katana. And I feel like I'm getting all of those things. The fact that I can record directly with this, the fact that it is very portable and small.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think that things have changed a lot over the last 10 years with guitar amps. I mean, I've been doing this nearly 30 years now, and I remember a big American company that I was working for just over 10 years ago, just before Blackstar, basically. We were ambivalent about even putting a USB output on the back of a valve amp. You know, there were some people, it was just like, no, absolutely no, it never should be on there. No, two different worlds, that kind of thing. But nowadays, it is completely acceptable to see those kind of connections on the back of a valve amp. And obviously that you have the benefit of what it is providing, which is, you know, probably going to be, you know, cab sim type outputs and ease of recording and all stuff like that. I think all of the, as you say, bells and whistles that we find on other products are kind of creeping into what we'd think of as more traditional equipment, because people, you know, another generation, they've got used to seeing all that stuff, and they've got used to the connectivity. And it's the same in general life. You know, we expect to be able to hook up our phones to our computers and our computers to the TV and our TV to the washing machine or whatever, you know. But we do expect to have connectivity between all our gadgets. And I think that guitar amps are, you know, often are a bit behind the rest of the world on certain things because we are quite, you know, traditional in what sounds we want. But I think the last 10 years has really changed things. So people are accepting this stuff without feeling, oh no, it's not a real amp if it's got a USB on it, you know.
Definitely, so, definitely. I think there's the hard end of the hard other end of that, which is, you know, Helix, Kemper, things like that, where people have got to be very committed to sort of a very new way of doing things. But I think things like Two Notes releasing, you know, their handy little, very affordable box, the Torpedo, that suddenly allowed you to be able to use valve amps. Oh, of course, there was stuff before that, but Two Notes was doing it for a price that everyone could get behind. Yeah. And all of a sudden, your valve amps were becoming things that you could record directly, that you could make a better job of. A better job of than shoving an SM57 in front of a cab in a live situation. This has all been moving towards this sort of thing. You know, Victory with the V4 series stuff this year. Of course, you guys have also done like some, pedal board amplifiers. Pedal board amplifiers in general are becoming a reasonable thing. And this feels like it's part of that movement. This is modern features, but you're keeping, you know, that all valve nature, so it's still a great sounding, familiar sounding product.
Hopefully, best of both worlds. You know, there's one way of looking at it. It is, you know, if you took out all the gadgets, you're left with what is, you know, a traditional valve guitar amp. With all the gadgets, it's then a modern version, which, as you say, it does allow you to do all the stuff that people have got used to doing with all their other bits of kit. So it's a kind of a way of keeping valve amps relevant in the modern world, because if we didn't start putting this stuff in, then I think people possibly would start moving away from them because they wouldn't be seeing the benefits. Hopefully with this kind of product, they're seeing, you know, they've got the benefits of the extra connectivity, but they've also got the massive benefit of it still sounding authentic, because it is, you know, it is.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I mean, you know, last week on the podcast, Matt and I were talking about, I just got back from a 2-week tour, and I'd mentioned that certainly seeing the gear of all the other bands we were playing with across the 2 weeks, you know, last time I went on a tour the year before, I'd maybe seen one or two silent stage bands, but now it was, you know, I think I said it was like a fifth or a quarter of the bands were turning up with, you know, just something like a Helix or Kemper, not running anything on stage. But the younger players are completely willing to move towards things like that. And so offering something that's giving everyone the convenience while still being a proper analog product.
With this, it does. I mean, obviously, it totally lends itself to the silent stage thing as well, with the built-in reactive load, and then the ability to take the cab rig output. It literally can do every gig or recording situation. As I say, that's what I've just been finding all year that I've been using them, is that I don't need to use anything else. You know, I can do a theatre pit gig, you know, with it just on silent next to me, but still have the same sound that I want to get if I actually connect a cabinet to it. I can use it in the recording studio. It's even light enough to stick in a case and take into a hotel room and put on headphones, right, you know. Yeah. So it really is, you know, something that can be used in any application.
And it went for vertical cabs as well, which I was very happy about. They look great.
Yeah, that's been a bit of a trend in recent years. Obviously, the two speakers just inherently just sounds way bigger than one anyway. But obviously, the vertical thing just means it's less floor space, so it's very convenient for you know, club gigs. Also, does get that second speaker a bit higher, means you know, you don't necessarily have to be so loud.
Don't need to pop it on beer crates.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, so, exactly. Yeah.
And Celestian Zephyrs.
Yeah. Of course, that's the other thing that we developed, obviously with Celestian, to be lightweight. We did talk early on in the development process about using neodymiums. The only thing, I mean, I actually personally
they're flavour of the month, aren't they?
I actually like them, but they are expensive, comparatively, and also some people have an opinion about them because they're not traditional.
I see.
You know, so we spoke to Celestian about the possibility of developing some, you know, ferrite based speakers, which would be lightweight as well, and they looked at all sorts of ways of, you know, chipping away at the magnet, basically, to take out areas which were not so needed for the magnetism, I think we're probably going to see a lot more of what they've developed in future products as well, because it took out a considerable amount of weight, and we still got the sound we wanted. You know,
right, so, as a neodymium alternative.
Yeah, that's right.
People who want a more traditional speaker might be opting for this sort of thing instead of a neodymium. That's interesting.
Yeah,
because you feel you're sort of bound to them. If you want to make a lightweight cab, it's you put neodymiums in them. And, you know, I agree that I like them, but I also agree that they have a very specific sound.
Yeah.
And if that's not the sound you want, you're sort of stuck with it.
Yeah, that's right. So that's why we thought let's not alienate people by going a certain way, because people there's already some people would be like questioning, oh, SMPS, what is that, you know? So we wanted to make sure we put effort into making them lightweight but still, you know, have the right sound
Fine line to tread. You've sort of made for yourself with the St. James. You want a traditional sort of product. It's an all valve traditional product with, you know, that sounds like a proper guitar amp, but lots of things on it are new directions. And
yeah, that's, I mean, it was partly why it did take a lot of time to develop fully. The Cadbury thing, it was actually something that the digital team were working on for some other products, and it's something you'll see coming out on several Blackstar products, and obviously has done this year. And it was a lucky coincidence that they were doing that, and then I had this idea about having this internal reactive load that automatically switches in when you're not connected to speaker, all this kind of thing, because we've got the low power setting as well. So it meant that the internal load could be small as well as the transformer, because if you're only running at 2 watts, you don't need normally you'd need a load as big as the amp to run into. But it was another thing that it was combining some technology that we already had with some stuff that was coming through for other products to overall make the whole product that much better. So it was a real good example of the whole team working and producing this thing.
It's very thorough. It's very thorough. The idea of the reactive load as well. That for me seems like this weird thing that's not been, even though it is available, exists. I'm sure, you know, you could probably tell me some very good reasons why it's not in everything, but I don't understand why it's not in everything these days. You're literally stopping stuff from breaking.
Well, it's mainly because if you're going to run a 50 or 100 watt amp into a reactive load, the reactive load has got to be big. It's heavy inductors. It's like, you know, transformer size inductors and resistors, so that it'd have to be big. But because we already have the low power settings, then we're able to combine the logic switching and everything, so that when you're in a certain setting, it won't allow the amp to be in the high power setting, and it would instantly direct the signal to the internal load rather than having any problem. You know, obviously people always panic about using a valve amp with it unconnected and all this kind of thing.
Sure, yeah.
But this, we have done for a number of years, we have all kind of control circuitry which prevents any of that from being able to be a possibility in our amps. They're fully protected, whatever you're doing. You know, people don't need to worry. I still get questions about it now, even though it clearly says it in the handbook. You know, you can use this without connecting to a speaker cabinet. And people, they still panic about it. Look, I've got to have it connected to a virus. Like, no, you don't have to have it connected at all. Just sit it on your desk, use the headphone output, XLR output, no problem. Some people still panic, but it's all internally loaded, protected. So again,
everyone's done it a number of times. I did it only the other week. I just changed cabs, and I didn't realize I hadn't plugged a head in at the back.
Yeah.
Turned it on. That was the end of that. I still need to take that apart and see.
Did it actually damage it then?
Oh yeah, well it stopped working completely. Obviously a completely different amp. Yeah, it was my little Ashdown CTM30, their little 30 watt recording amplifier. I didn't plug it into the background. Turned it on for some time though. I sort of turned it on, was like, oh, that's not working. Sat around for a minute, was like, oh, maybe it's heating up. And it took me a couple of minutes to realize and get up and go over. And by that time, I could smell cooking.
Oh, no. Oh, dear. Right. Okay. Yeah. Well, as I say, that can't happen with these amps.
Well,
they're all protected. Yeah. Yeah.
Wonderful news. Well, that is actually about all the time that we've got on this week's podcast, Paul. Thank you very much for joining us
to
talk all about the Blackstar St. James. It's been great to have an insight into a really unique, interesting amplifier that's kind of, you know, doing something a little bit different, but it's still something that I am excited about.
Good, thanks. Well, just a quick little plug at the end here. We did actually win an award last week. I can't believe I've forgotten the term, because it was the buzzword of the week. Game changer. Sorry. Game changer award, and it became, yes, it was shoved into nearly every sentence. I can't believe it slipped my mind then. But yeah, the game changer award, which was a particularly nice one to get, because hopefully that will make people look at what that award is and go, oh, I need to find out more. because that isn't just best guitar amp. That is, you know, it's game changer. So
yeah,
hopefully
yeah,
people want to look into why. I mean,
it's obviously done very well for Blackstar. That's one thing we didn't speak about, but it's appeared in Reverb.com's top 20, specifically the EL34, in Reverb's top 20 amplifiers sold this year, which is fantastic.
Brilliant.
You also got a load of other stuff. You've got like the Guitar.com gave you Editor's Choice. I think Music gave you the NAMM 2002 Editor's Choice.
Yeah, there's been a few. It was May we launched it, and then obviously more of a public launch at NAMM in June. And yeah, I mean, I don't want to brag, but I've kind of lost count of how many awards we've had, or nominations at least. So it's been
a great position to be in.
Yeah.
Well, well deserved, because it's a really good product. Dear listener, you know, do go and check one out. They actually have the video demos released by Blackstar themselves are very good, but there are plenty of YouTubers out there making noises with the amplifier. And of course, Matt and me did a little demo a couple of weeks ago on the Patreon, where, dear listener, you can join us. You can head over to our Patreon for as little as $1 a month. You'll get this episode ad-free and early. $5 gets you access to our Patreon special episodes and our entire back catalogue. $10 gets you the lot. Plus, I'll sing you my thanks at the end of every episode. Find us on all your favourite social media platforms. Join the Guitar Nerds group on Facebook to get involved in our weekly episode discussion. And yeah, check out the St. James stuff, blackstaramps.com, you know, and of course everywhere else. I don't really need to direct you of where to check out Blackstar Amps, but go and check them out. They're very cool. And we'll be back in 2 weeks from now with the Gear of the Year podcast series. Thanks very much. You've been lovely. We've been the Guitar Nerds. Farewell.
The Sonic Pickups, Suresh, Chris Franklin, Anton Friant, and Barry Gresbick, Steve Davis, Danny Walker, Jorrit Brown, Andy Hoffler, Ollie Simpson, John Conway, Russell Healing, Paul Drew, Peter Pesh, Ty Allen, Yogi the Guitarist, Sean Hughes, Brian Hansen, Eric Emmer, Jeffrey Wax, Brian Einsler, Gavin Van der Linden, Andy Manley, Mark Zau, Katowacki, Simon Milbourne, and Stuart Robson, Eric File, Joe Prunty, James Dorr, Abe Matthews, Kytopia, The Band, Russ Edwards, Stephen Burke, Dave Lee, Jane Gray, Scott Kennedy, Christopher Loseth, Derek Rich.